This week on Diverted.
¿Te gusta Media Luna?
Sí, well, you know, cuando tienes tiempo en Argentina es esencial para comer Media Luna todos los tiempos.
I tell the story of how my hitchhiking disaster led me to the family of Alexis McAllister.
Para nosotros también es un gran orgullo que mi hermano haya jugado con Maradona y Alexis, su hijo, haya jugado con Messi, que son los dos más grandes exponentes del fútbol mundial que dio la Argentina.
I also meet Dickie McAllister at the Buenos Aires Hurling Club. And we discover the national sport of Argentina, pato.
¿Anduviste en otro lado filmando pato ya o no?
Diverted. Coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. Good evening, you're welcome along to Tuesday Nights Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. And coming up on tonight's show, we're going to be speaking to Henry de Bromhedge and Davy Russell from 7:30. Obviously coming right off the back of a busy weekend of sport. It's almost as if Rachel Blackmore wanted nobody to talk about her on last night's show. So we're finally putting the time aside to do a proper piece from 7:30 this evening. So Henry and Davy with us from that time. We're going to be speaking to Drogheda United manager Kevin Doherty on the show tonight. He's got a brilliant story himself, was a very promising youngster as a footballer, was playing on Brian Kerr's underage side for Ireland when he suffered a broken femur while playing for the Republic of Ireland underage team. One of the few footballers I ever heard of to break his femur. He was in with Liverpool at the time and it obviously sent his whole football career into a different trajectory. Now he had a very successful League of Ireland career and he's having a bloody successful year with Drogheda United this year as well. They're flying high in the Premier Division, so he's going to join us in studio from 9 p.m. and then between 8 and 9 we're going to be playing part 8 of our weekly documentary Diverted. So this week we're in Argentina. The stories this week are Alexis McAllister's family, who I went to visit. There's a story of the hurling club in Buenos Aires and the man there, he's also called McAllister. And then there's a story of the national sport of Argentina, which is not football. It is called pato. It's a game played on horses, which is kind of like polo, but it's not polo. All to be explained between 8 and 9. You can get in touch with us this evening on WhatsApp. 0879 180 180 is our number. Cameron Hill has got your news round. Evening, Cameron.
Howdy.
And Mick McCarthy is here in studio as well. Mick, how are you doing?
Hi, Owen. I enjoyed the episode of Diverted this week that I listened to this morning. For those who are just listening to the radio pieces, like, I mean, you're getting the sense of all the interviews and all, but obviously we have to fill for radio hour. They're missing your the second timeline.
Yes.
Which is the non-sport hitchhiking
story
through Patagonia, which will, I think we will end up playing in full post the 10 episodes, and we'll play it maybe on the Bank Holiday Monday, but very, very enjoyable. Again, not strictly sport of any means, but
no.
a personal journey of and a half, I suppose.
And this is the week where they finally converge. People are like, is this going to have any relevance whatsoever to the sports story? And I was like, no, it's just a bit of crack. But they finally do converge, and without spoiling anything too much, this is basically where I ended up stranded in the middle of nowhere in Patagonia. I ended up getting chatting to these lads who knew Alexis McAllister's family, basically. And they opened the door, they sent me the contacts, and we ended up getting a great sports piece out of that random interaction where, hopefully anyway, people will get a lot of insight into the McAllister mindset this evening. These are high-performance mindset people,
I think
it's fair to say.
Very impressive people, actually, the entire McAllister clan, I have to say. Yeah, so we'll hear more from that. What they won't hear, though, and people just go back to... For those who have listened or will listen, they'll understand this. For those who don't, they'll just have to wait in their ignorance until they listen to the podcast. But I have to say, listed this morning, when the mattress appeared... I cheered.
Great.
On your behalf.
Yeah.
this is unbelievable drama all the way through.
A mattress on the floor is something that brought me a lot of joy about 2 years ago at this point.
I'm saving the whole thing for I'm going in trailing at the end of June.
Right.
And I just want that as my sort of soundtrack.
Okay, that's very kind of you, Cameron.
As a sort of comparison, as long as it's not going this badly, because I've listened to the first episode, I think I'm doing well.
That's
He's still here.
I am
That's
here.
True.
That is the spoiler. I don't die. That is the only real spoiler.
Sorry about that, guys.
That I'll give away. Not to spoil your news round too much, Cameron, because I know it's your top story tonight, but we've got to start with the news about the NFL this year, Mick. As somebody who presents the NFL pod, how big a deal is this? How excited are you for the Steelers against Green Bay?
Against Vikings. Yeah, we thought it might be Green Bay for a while, but it's like incredibly excited. Like, I mean... I'm not like, I've been to the Wembley game a few times and look, I will try to, let's see how tickets and availability and so on goes. Like I will try to go to this almost for the history of it, but like I'm not like a, I'm kind of at the stage now where I'm not like overly pressed about necessarily just going to NFL games for the sake of it as a neutral. But at the same time, I don't know, like the Steelers are such a big team. I don't think they're going to be amazing this year, unfortunately. They don't really have a quarterback at the moment, and they traded their best receiver and all this, but they're such an important historical team. The fact that they're making, that they're never bad really in the regular season, so they'll still find a way to be relevant. But even so, they'll certainly not be gone for long. And the fact that they're the team that are going to hitch up to Ireland is just, it's really good. But actually, this is one of the better games, you know, that they could possibly have, because we don't know what to expect from the Vikings either. So yeah, I think regardless of who it was, I think it's such a historic kind of moment, and so many people, so many eyes will be on Croke Park around the world, obviously particularly in America. It's just going to be an amazing occasion. I actually think we will actually do it justice. It isn't this kind of like, you know, sometimes with these games there can be kind of a sense of like a created hype. We try to make it bigger than it is, but how much are people really paying attention outside of the place where we're making this occasion? This isn't going to be the case with this.
No, it's a big deal.
Can I ask about the Wembley game? So is it the kind of all the famous sort of trimmings with an NFL game like we'd have with the college football, will that, is that
100%
imported over from to London, and will it be brought to Dublin?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. What kind of trimmings do you talk about? Like a marching band and all
the
of this?
The tailgating, the marching band, all that sort of stuff. That kind of
a lot of that stuff is more for the college stuff because they will literally have their bands and so on. But the cheerleaders, the bands, everything that will be there. Tailgating is sometimes a little bit more organised, I think, internationally. So I don't know. I think they'll have like official tailgate parties and all. I don't know what they will do necessarily in Dublin for that, or where they will put it. But yeah, it's not a case of the reason that tailgating works in America is because stadiums exist
with
in
car
the
parks.
Center of the world's largest car
parks.
Of
car parks.
And people can go and do their thing. That doesn't happen in European stadiums.
No, unless they manage to get that Clonliffe site turned around in double quick time, or else just the underground car park of the Croke Park Hotel or something like that, for a massive tailgate. What I found, and I've only been to the London game once, is that it's a celebration of American football. So you have people wearing their own franchise
wearing their own
jerseys.
Yeah.
And I presume Dublin's going to be the same
It'll
thing.
It'll be the exact same, yeah.
As much as like the Steelers have tried to get the Dublin fan base up and running, and I'm sure that's been successful to a degree, and they will probably have more fans at it than...
Oh, that's the way
because
it is.
As a home game.
And it is funny because there is a kind of a community there, and anyone who will have gone out during the playoffs or anything like that to like places like the Woolshed and so we'll see there is a sort of a community of people who care about the sport, and that I think is great at the Wembley games or at the college games here and so on. So I think, you know, one of the things I always remember from the Wembley games is the kind of the Wembley way, and seeing all the different jerseys, the walk to and the walk from. And I'm kind of interested to put that in my Croke Park experience of walking down Clonliffe Road. And, you know, we all have that as going to so many GAA games over the years of like our walk to Croke Park. And it's just transferring that to an NFL game is just going to be interesting.
Yeah.
As I think it was when we were going to soccer and rugby a few years, you know, like a good few years ago now. But I remember it being almost exciting to do this in for something else.
Well, when you said it was like a celebration of all fans just come to celebrate the sport, my instant thought was, oh, like the darts. It's just, that's the whole point of the darts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stand up if you love the NFL is the chant in Croke Park, I think, this year. So this is your top story this evening, Cameron, in the news round, which is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. So you may fill in the blanks for us.
Yeah, the Minnesota Vikings confirmed as the opponents for the Steelers in their NFL game at Croke Park later this year. It was confirmed today at Dublin Castle. The first regular season American football game to be held in Ireland. The Steelers played a preseason game in Dublin back in 1997. So that game is in game week 4. I believe the fixtures are to be released tomorrow for the entire season, but that will take place on Sunday, September 28th. And Vikings head coach Kevin O'Connell was speaking today. He hopes that they can pick up some new fans while they're in Ireland.
I've already learned in a very short amount of time about many aspects of what makes Croke Park so special and an amazing venue for us to get the opportunity to play at. And I know our players will feel the same. And now we get the opportunity leading into, you know, not only that trip. But, you know, our experience is there, albeit will be a short time comparatively speaking, but we're going to try to make the most of it and look forward to building a lot of relationships and hopefully acquiring some new Minnesota Vikings fans along the way.
Cian Fahey's pointing out that the Steelers are the only NFL team without cheerleaders. That's a good tip. Okay. I didn't realize that. And also that he's expecting the Steelers fans to travel to an insane degree. So it might
That's another thing. There will be an unbelievable influx as well. One thing I was going to say, we're listening to Kevin O'Connell there. It is an interesting matchup in terms of even coaches. Like, Kevin O'Connell is one of the kind of young hotshot coaches in the NFL. The Vikings massively overachieved last year with a what people thought was a bust quarterback in Sam Darnold, and he had a comeback season for the ages. They were well beaten in the playoffs, but they weren't, not much was expected of them. Darnold is gone now. They've got their quarterback, rookie quarterback who was injured last year, JJ McCarthy. Good Irish name as well.
To go along with
good Irish name, Kevin O'Connell. Just if you want to be a Vikings fan for a few months and get set up for this game. So that's who will be there. But O'Connell is a hotshot coach. And then the opposite almost side of with the Steelers, Mike Tomlin, who's been there forever. They've only had three coaches in like 60 years. It's a long time since he won a Super Bowl now, but he has won one. And also, like, always finds a way to be, like, again, talent deficit there at the moment is a worry, but he's the kind of guy who you'll expect will just sort of make them, you know, they're not going to be a bust going for the number one pick, because that's not in the Steelers or Mike Tomlin's DNA. So again, just two little points there, but yeah, by names alone, we're heading on the more Irish side with
the Vikings.
But of course, the Rooney's always dominate the Irishness of the NFL in general.
Yep. So. Famously founded Dublin.
Yeah, they'll be getting their
the Vikings.
The Vikings, there you go. Yeah, thanks. Well done for explaining.
Yeah.
The Vikings banner is going to change its colours that week, I think. Someone's been in touch to say, have the tailgate party on the M50, biggest car park in Europe.
Hey.
0879 180 180 is our number on WhatsApp. Where do you want to go next, Cameron?
Well, the second of the English Championship playoff finalists will be confirmed tonight. So Sunderland or Coventry City will join Sheffield United in that final. So Sunderland take a 2-1 lead into the second leg tonight in the Stadium of Light. But City boss Frank Lampard has outlined his message to the players ahead of the game.
Well, the players have to understand why we've got to where we have from Christmas, from being around 17th, from looking a long way from the playoffs. The reason that they've got to where they are is because of the way we play, because of what they do individually within that collective. But you saw the way we want to play. Sunderland came and respected us, to be fair, in the first game and got their result, but you can see the way we want to play. We need to do a few details better, which we can explain to the players. But other than that, keep doing what we've been doing and trust themselves, because it's a game of football. Take away all the talk, all the environment, all the fans, the game of football on the pitch, for us to go and try and play like we did the other day without the little errors that we put in. Try not to do those. And also that little bit more intent, like I talk about.
Well, the Black Cats certainly know how Coventry expect to play. Apparently, I read today, they've scored more headers and goals from crosses than any other team in the Premier League and EFL combined this year. So Sunderland have decided to push the LED advertisements in by 2 metres to counteract Milan Van Avik's long throws for tonight. Wow. Nice bit of gamesmanship from them.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
We're going to hope to speak to Megan Campbell at some point this week on the show. And I mean, I wonder if they've started to think about that when teams come up against her as well.
Yeah, there's an interest in now, like, you know, how to counter long throws and all that. Like, you know, it's like you can't do them properly at Old Trafford, can't you not? Because of the drop.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's really hard to do. But do you remember there was a guy, I've forgotten his name on the show before, and I got loads of texts because I said it was someone else. I think it was Challoner or something like that for Tranmere. Anyway, he was like a weapon for like a small period of time. They got to the League Cup final, I think, and couldn't stop. But then teams started, like, you know, making sure there was no towels lying around us, you know, as it's an away game. There's no towels on the sideline, you know what I mean? So he wasn't able to dry the ball. He'd be like putting it under his shirt to try and dry it and stuff. People are like, you know, everyone remembers Wenger when, you know, the lap started it. Like, teams are scared to death of the long throw.
But why?
Like, it really is one of those things that bothers opposition, because you don't see it every week. Someone might have a wicked left foot or whatever, and it's like maybe it's unplayable, but I don't feel like they're in fear of it all week in the build up to the game. But when someone has a long throw, it, like, it dominates preparation.
And I think that's because it's quite often unique. It goes in phases.
Yeah.
Like it feels like, oh, this is a throwback, pardon the pun, to Rory Delap, this player for Sunderland, for example. Why is it not a constant feature of football? Do we look down upon the long throw as like a far too rudimentary way to play the beautiful game?
I think unfairly.
It's just stupid. See,
like, what's the difference between kicking the ball into the middle of the box from a corner?
Done badly. It's also often done badly. Like, it can be such a... What happens is, you get a throw, it's in an attacking position, you get the game going again, you start again, you try something, you continue your attack, basically. Whereas when it's a long throw, somebody comes over from the far wing, drives the ball, turns it into this big set piece, whacks it into the box, header clear.
And that's more acceptable.
And you've been waiting for 3 minutes for that to happen. For me, anyway, as a fan, you know, like Matty Cash went through a period of trying the long throws, and it was always really frustrating because you were just like, you get a throw and it's like, oh, here he comes now, over to the left hand side, we have to wait for Matty Cash to organise the throw, he throws it in, nothing comes of it, and it's like, well, I'm glad we wasted 2 minutes while we're chasing the game here, you know.
Was that one of Austin McPhee's
tactics? Sure it was, yeah,
you know. maybe the set piece coaches think it's actually way too one dimensional. And they're like, well, I'm getting paid big bucks here, and all I'm saying is just launch it in.
Long throw, yeah.
For Arsenal, that certainly was the aim the other night.
Well, they kept it up the sleeve all year long, and boy, did they prove the doubters wrong by bringing it out at the perfect time.
But you know, there's something in the long throw conversation that always bothers me a little bit. I feel like history has forgotten Mick McCarthy. Not me, but my namesake. It's always like, oh, Rory Delap, and even Dave Challoner, who I've just mentioned. Mick McCarthy had a wicked long throw. Yeah. Ronnie Whelan's goal.
Clip that.
Scored. Remember we scored against Albania in USA 94 qualifiers. If you don't, then you're not a real Irish fan. You know, Mick McCarthy's long throws.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you can name all the individuals with significant long throws that you should be able to name. Like, it's such a short list is my point. And I just don't understand why we keep moving away from this thing that we... Like, how did...
Difficult to do.
It's really difficult.
Like, Megan Campbell's so good because her trajectory is insane. It doesn't make any sense. It starts off low and gets higher.
Yeah.
You know,
it stays hit.
It's not like a Tony Pulis school for six-year-olds teaching them how to throw the ball and, like, just creating this next generation of great throwers. Like,
where do you go to school? I go to the Tony Pulis school for 6-year-olds.
The academy.
Who can't throw good.
I'm out for age next year.
Go to throwing school. I remember last year, Jimmy Cohan playing for Galway United against Shells in Talca Park. And you know Talca Park, that there's not a lot of room on the touchline there or even around the pitch. So he had to do a kind of long, you know, the long jump or high jump sort of arcing run to just get the momentum for the line. It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, maybe that's the reason why, you know, it's out of your control quite a lot when you go to away grounds. But that's a really interesting nugget ahead of tonight's game. One text in here about the NFL. How come people constantly complain about sports matches being too long and drawn out, yet they'll spend over 3 hours watching a game that should take an hour, and yet is full of stoppages and VAR checks, which people can't tolerate in football? Are they different people, potentially?
Different sports, set-piece game. Yeah, I think you're right, actually. That's a fair point. I think a lot of people who are football watchers can't even get their head around the idea of the NFL. And one of the reasons they say is all the things that those texters say, why all the stoppages can't handle them, can't handle the ad breaks, etc. But I think, actually, the fact that it's a game of set-pieces, every play is its own thing. It can stop the game. It doesn't really do anything to it to stop it. Now, the clock doesn't automatically stop, but you know, there's things in the rules to stop the clock and so on. It's a far more natural thing to happen. In football, like, it's still, like, how many years are we into VAR now? Like, you know, it was 7, 8, you know, and it's still feeling...
That's terrible.
No way are we that long into it.
2018 Champions League was the VAR Champions League, sure, was it?
No way.
2019? When was the Ajax, Spurs, City? That's 2019, wasn't it? That was all VAR. Aguero's goal?
I refuse to... the pandemic began before VAR entered our lives, surely, no?
Well, no, I don't know if it was in the Premier League.
Definitely there.
Yeah.
It's not just a weird moment of time passing by extremely
quickly. Absolutely. But what I mean is it still doesn't feel natural. It still doesn't feel like it's a game that's meant to be stopped for 5 minutes at a time.
No.
That means Charlie Austin's Park Life thing is 8 years old.
There you go. Time does flitter by very quickly.
That was the year before.
12 years since 12 years today since the Troy Deeney Watford Leicester game, the greatest game of football ever played.
Yeah. I didn't know that was 12 years today. There you go. You see, the time is just a strange circle. Right, bring us on to Goodison Park here, Cameron.
Yeah, that'll become the permanent home of the Everton women's team from the start of next season. So the men's team play their final game at the famous Merseyside Ground on Sunday before they move to their new stadium at Branley Moor Dock. But the decision follows an in-depth review of the Goodison Legacy Project by the Freegan Group since their takeover in December. So there was question marks over the survival of Goodison Park, but that question seems to have been answered with the women's team moving in.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. So that'll be the Everton women's team from the start of next season. Big breakup news, meanwhile, in the world of tennis.
Murray and Djokovic, it's over. They've ended their coaching partnership after 6 months of working together. So Murray came on board as the Serbs coach back in December ahead of the Australian Open. Djokovic goes on to beat Alcaraz in the quarterfinal there and then goes out injured in the semi-final, but a recent run of poor results has resulted in Murray stepping away less than 2 weeks to go before the French Open.
And you have retirement news in rugby?
Yeah, former England international and Harlequins scrum half Danny Kerr announcing he'll retire at the end of the season. 394 appearances for Quinn since joining in 2006 with two Premiership titles and a Challenge Cup to boot. He also featured at two World Cups for England, won three Six Nations Championships there in a career that spanned 101 caps.
And then some really depressing news in cycling as well.
Bradley Wiggins, he's revealed he became addicted to cocaine. So the former Olympic cycling champion became a functioning addict following his retirement from cycling in 2016. The 45-year-old, who was declared bankrupt last month, credited disgraced cyclist Lance Armstrong in helping him in his recovery. Britain's first Tour de France winner is now 12 months sober following regular therapy sessions. The extracts of his autobiography to be released later this year featured Armstrong prominently, it seems.
And then Sam Bennett
finished sixth in a sprint finish this afternoon, stage four of the Giro d'Italia. So Casper Van Uden won today's 189-kilometre stage from Albarello to Lecce, with Mads Pedersen finishing fourth to retain the pink jersey. So Bennett is 150th in general classification. Tyrone native Darren Rafferty in 112th.
Cameron Hill, thank you for tonight's news round. We're going to be speaking to Henry de Bromhead and Davy Russell next to pay tribute to Rachel Blackmore after her retirement from jumps racing yesterday. We're also going to be playing you episode 8 of Diverted after 8 o'clock, and then football show with Kevin Doherty coming up after 9 o'clock. This week on Diverted.
¿Te gusta Media Luna?
Sí, well, you know, cuando tienes tiempo en Argentina es esencial para comer Media Luna todos los tiempos.
I tell the story of how my hitchhiking disaster led me to the family of Alexis McAllister.
Para nosotros también es un gran orgullo que mi hermano haya jugado con Maradona y Alexis, su hijo, haya jugado con Messi, que son los dos más grandes exponentes del fútbol mundial que dio la Argentina.
I also meet Dickie McAllister at the Buenos Aires Hurling Club. And we discover the national sport of Argentina, pato.
¿Anduviste en otro lado filmando pato ya o no?
Diverted. Coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts.